serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to discuss one of those warbirds that always draws a reaction, the fork-tailed P-38 Lightning, with a man who flew 76 missions in them in World War II. If you happened to attend UC Riverside, Don Stoutenborough might have been your English or drama or speech instructor. But at the end of World War II in Europe, this decorated pilot had a very unique experience. Harry Truman had been president for only a matter of weeks after the death of Franklin D. Roosevelt. And why would a battle-tested 22-year-old P-38 pilot who'd already survived a fiery crash landing think that an overnight delivery he was asked to make might possibly relate to the newly installed commander-in-chief?
Here I'm at Wing. And I have a friend, Waterhouse is his name, Stoutenborough and Waterhouse. Sounds like a legal group, doesn't
sure
it?
Sure does, yeah.
All right, we're at Wing Operations. If somebody wants something done in one of the squadrons out there, they called Wing. Could somebody do this for us? This time the thing came in, we would like a courier with a toothbrush.
Courier with a toothbrush.
Oh, all right. I thought this is going to be an overnighter. I hope to get this. Well, Waterhouse, you know, we took a deck of cards and then the card. I get the King of Diamonds. He got a seven of something. Oh, poor Waterhouse. He says, oh, he was so mad because it was with a toothbrush. We didn't know where we're going to go. I know, you know. So this was a very, very nice routine I was going into.
Great assignment. Sounds promising.
Except, where was I going? I found out where I was going when I got to Naples. I fly my plane over to Naples, and it's late afternoon, and I'm going to London. Okay, I'd never been to London, of course.
Do you have any idea what it is that you're carrying, what you're delivering?
No. They All said, right. You're this cumbersome 40-pound, awfully difficult. I have to put it on my hip bone, you know, over here.
It's so big you have to use your leg to help carry it.
Uh-huh. It's very heavy, 40 pounds I think it would be. Anyway, it was full of film.
Big canisters of film, in this case, a heavy case.
Right. Now, uh-huh. I didn't know what it was. Until I got there.
So you just know you've got this heavy case and it's got to go to London.
Have to go to London. I have to wait for it to arrive. It isn't even there.
Okay.
Waiting for it to come. Okay, I'm thinking, well, we'll do it tomorrow. No, it's just be there. I'm thinking, I'm going to London, to Bovington. Turns out that's the VIP landing place. Mm-hmm. Important people went there. And finally, we get it. And finally, I get the weather. And finally, the plane is ready, and I'm on my way to London. I've been briefed that the weather is okay. It's all quite doable. And so I take off and fly to London up the Loire River. I'm enjoying the flight. I'm not going to go too high because I want to be able to see what I get. But I'm going there. I'm not taking any time off. I'm going the same direction. The package is behind me, and it's late afternoon. But when I got in view of the Eiffel Tower, I could see, but I couldn't see. I couldn't see. What was that? You know, is that fog in the air by the Eiffel Tower? You can see what the weather is over there. Well, I don't mean that I saw lightning or anything like that, but I saw, and it's late, but I'm coming into Bovington. I don't know anything about it. Thank God I didn't try to do it. Believe me. I couldn't even find it the next day. I'm thinking I'm going to a strange airport. We're going to find it. I bet you it's going to be camouflaged. Boy, talk about camouflaged. They'd done a farm. I landed in a farm with cows in it. Well, they went to a hell of a lot of trouble to put the important people at a safe camouflaged facility.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to bomb that place. You couldn't see it. I wouldn't have seen it. So I land at Orly. Okay. And I take my little friend, you know, with me to my room. I ask the guy, where should I eat? He says, I got a great place for you. Wonderful. It's in town. How long does it take to get to town? Oh, here's the bus. You know, bus. No problem. So he directed me, and I said, I'll have to take this thing with me. What do you got there? I said, I don't know. They didn't label anything. Didn't say most secret or no. I took it with me downtown because I was going to eat this wonderful mess for just officers. It was a French restaurant, but not really. It was a wonderful meal, but I had this on my hip the whole time. I was getting a sore hip, actually. But I was downtown. It was night, of course, dark, pitch dark. And they were having an election. Boy, it was exciting because the real people were out on the streets and they were getting some returns from the mission. I don't speak French, but I could figure the happiness and the excitement it was going on. And so I was just enjoying everything except this thing on my hip. But I was so happy to be there, and the food was incredible because it's GI food from America fixed by a French chef in this officers' club with my thing I could put on the floor, you see. Oh, I was in heaven. Why? I'm so lucky, lucky, lucky. Okay, so I finally caught the bus back. I knew how to do that. The phone is ringing for you, Stoughtonborough. Oh, this number. Call it, London. This guy was, his voice, gibberish, really, really. He couldn't even tell me how mad he was. I did not think it was safe to come, sir. I'm not familiar with your airport over there.
You've been going to dinner. You went to dinner downtown in Paris.
I said, I have to eat somewhere, sir. I'll be there tomorrow. I said, what I've got in here is not food. It's not going to spoil. I have it with me. I've never left it. Your product is absolutely safe in my... I have the hip. I can show you to prove I've carried it with me. And he said something like, don't you take that tone with me. Well, he was a full bird colonel. I didn't mean to take a tone with him, but I was just telling him that I didn't think it was safe to come. I would not have made it if I had done it, because I couldn't see it the next day. Sun bright. They were very impatient. You are exactly over us, sir. P-38, you are there. We're looking at your bottom, you know. Just look out. I says, I can't. I'll have to turn the plane to look at you. Please do that, because I couldn't find it. So they talked me down to the farm. I avoided the cows. I mean, it was camouflaged very carefully. Whatever the situation would be, they couldn't have talked me down at nighttime. So I'm there, have nice breakfast. I go over to London at Bovington, and there's a jeep waiting for me. Anyway, he rings me up, and I'm introduced to the full bird colonel. And there's just something about him immediately. I think he's really mad at me, isn't he? And he was so mad at me that he couldn't really talk to me, you know. You're going to learn about this, sir. Do you know what you were carrying? No, sir, I do not, sir.
It was for the president, for last night. President Truman was...
I am going to talk to your General Struthers.
So what did you ultimately learn about what it was you were carrying?
He told me what it was.
Tell us, what was it?
It was this film of the surrender of Italy. The film beginning to end, well, I don't know how much film do they need. So there have to be something else going on there, or maybe there are many copies of it. I don't know. It was 40 pounds, and it was for the president, Truman. And was it only time I talked to your general?
So he's reading you the riot act.
Oh, really did, really did. So I come home, and I tell the general, sir, you're probably going to get a call from a colonel, that named him, from London, complaining about my staying in Paris. Mm-hmm. And he says, what outfit is he in? You know, they get the celebrities over here. Then laughter from my general. He says, Stout, are you kidding me? He says, Stout, how many people are in your plane? I said, one. He says, who's in charge of your plane? Who's the captain of your plane? Who makes the decision about what the plane's going to do? I says, of course, I have it. So he can go hang it up, get mad about what? You didn't think it was safe, and as it turns out, it probably wasn't. He says, I've been to that field. He says, you didn't do the wrong thing at all. That is the best camouflage, I think, that they've done. That's a historic camouflage job, Bovington. I felt relieved. The fact that he says, what outfit is you say he's from, you know? And he laughed. So what did that guy having to do with entertainment telling this captain that he had to be there the night before?
So you're off the hook.
I am completely off the hook.
And the president just had to wait a little longer to see that footage.
probably saw it just as quickly. I got up early, you know, I had breakfast, and I got into London quickly. So they had the whole day to get that thing across the Atlantic.
I guess there's one more question I have to ask you on that. Had you known what it was and who it was for, would you have acted any differently?
No, I would not. When I saw it, when I landed there, you did the right thing, Stout, you know. Camouflage can fool me. I'm a sucker. I have two versions of what happened when I get credit for two planes shot down. One says they're confirmed, and one says they're not confirmed. I've always liked the idea that I didn't kill anybody. You claim one, but you claim one with people who were there. They verify. You don't make it up. You know, both cases, I was a wing person. I wasn't the leading of the flight. One was a 109 and one was a 190. Mm-hmm. So I got a Falk Wolf and a Messerschmitt. Now I've got two books, and one of them says I did it. Two of them confirmed. I can show you in the book. And another book, not this book in here, says those were not confirmed. I thought, that's the one that's true. It's true. I don't want the credit for shooting a guy down. If I really did it, you know, I hope he hit the sack. I didn't like killing anybody.
So I want to understand here. Are you saying you shot the plane down, they gave you a Distinguished Flying Cross for it, but for your own state of mind, you don't like thinking about what might have happened to the pilot of that other plane?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I shot a lot of planes. I shot a lot of locomotives. I keep looking for it on the television. It's just too much to believe. What a wonderful explosion beneath my plane, all on film. And then Stoutenboro. This is they showed you the movies.
Afterwards,
you know. Everybody could go to the movies.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know. I knew I shot the locomotive, but I didn't know it was that beautiful or that dramatic or that explosive.
You're not saying so much that the guy who wrote up your citation was lying. You're saying it's uncomfortable for you to think about it in those terms.
Yeah, if they're not confirmed, fine. That's the way I go. I don't think there wasn't anybody there. If it did, he bailed out. I'm pretty happy to know that it's not confirmed, you know. So how neat. I am loving what I'm doing, and now I didn't hurt anybody. Now, the guy in the locomotive, where did he go? The locomotive guy, I can't make anything.
You can't do any mental gymnastics to avoid that one. And I just don't want anyone hearing it to be confused. That's why I asked you so many times. So I just wanted to get the right understanding.
Well, all right. This is my first tour. First tour. The flight leader was a first lieutenant. Now, he's my superior, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he said I shot it down. He confirmed that I did it. Okay, that's fine. I do it. I live with that. And then it's published that, no, this is not confirmed. And I think, well. How nice, wonderful. I didn't hurt anybody. I had never been happier than when I had a P-38 in charge of it. I loved that plane. Every day I would thank whomever for the good luck I was having. I didn't get killed. I had 76 missions. I wanted to stop at 75, but that last mission I knew was a good one, and so I did 76. So I had 15 oak leaf clusters.
What would you say you're most proud of?
That I did what I did, and that my wife was with me.
And she'd be with him for the rest of her life. Don and Phyllis enjoyed 57 years of marriage after tying the knot in those turbulent times of World War II. She was with him as he used the GI Bill to attend the University of Southern California. They raised three sons as Don went on to run a successful motel business, become a college instructor at the University of California in his hometown of Riverside. He served as national sales manager for Spoken Arts, an educational multimedia company, and he spent many years as a volunteer docent at Palm Springs Air Museum. You've heard me tell you that the reason we have the privilege of meeting such an amazing array of veterans on this show is because of people who listen, people like you. You reach out to me and you tell me about the vets in your life. The privilege of meeting Don came from Edwards Life Sciences, which had celebrated many of the World War II veterans who'd received their transcatheter aortic heart valve replacement. From what I'm told, some folks assume they're just slowing down, when really their fatigue might come from a narrowing of a heart valve that restricts blood flow. That was the case for Don, but I should let him tell you about it. Don, since I only got to meet you because of Heather and the team at Edwards Life Sciences, I guess I ought to let you explain the difference that that heart valve has made for you.
Oh, well, it clearly, I was dehydrated and I didn't know it. Ooh, problems. But this was part of the problem with the heart, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it, but I just knew that I didn't have any poo out here. I was used to walking at least 2 miles every day, every day, every day, every day, and I can't do that. I haven't been able to bring it back up there. I could go a mile and a half, but I couldn't have done it if they hadn't given me the...
So you lost one of your engines and then you got it back? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. Very good. Hey, I wish I'd said that.
Well, you said enough, and you did enough. Thanks for your candor, and thank you for your service. Don Stoutenborough, 95 years old. Don't forget to go online for those outstanding portrait-style photographs by Zach Coco of Pictures for Heroes. Eventually, that project of Zach's is going to become a book, and some other vets who you've heard here on the radio over the years will be featured in it as well. I have all that information linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, as well as the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. Right now, it's time to bring this episode in for a landing, but thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.